Welcome to Careertools. This week, dealing with a negative company culture change. The questions this class answers are, how long should I wait after a negative company culture change? Can I change a company culture? And what is the most important action to take when company culture changes negatively?
Hello, everyone. We're coming to London, and we're so excited. London was one of our favorite cities. We'll be there June 27th, 28th, and 29th for an effective hiring manager, an effective manager, and an effective communicator conference. 3 days, June 27th, 28th, and 29th. We would love to see you if you're in the European theater and you're considering training about hiring, management, or communication. Feel free to come and see us at the London Heathrow Marriott and learn something new.
This guidance comes out of a question that we had from a listener, which is not an uncommon question, so we thought we'd answer it on a podcast. Her company had been taken over, and as is not uncommon, the culture of the company that had taken over was different to the one that she had worked on in for several years. And to her, it was a very negative change. She didn't like the way the new company was managed. She didn't like what she called the culture, the way things were done in that new company. And it had only been a couple of months, but she was already considering leaving and finding something new. But she'd been there, she'd been in the first company 4 or 5 years, and she didn't really want to leave. It was convenient for her. It was a good company, but she didn't know she could live with this new culture. And she was saying, should I stay or should I go? And that's a really complicated question. It depends on a lot of things, and we're not going to answer that. We didn't answer her without a bunch more information, and we're not going to answer that question for you right now. So if you find yourself in a similar situation, there's a whole lot more things to think about. But we are going to give you some things to consider when you're trying to think about, is this the right time to think about whether I'm going to stay or whether I'm going to go, and some things to think about when you're making that decision. And this situation can happen not just when a company is taken over, but when a company gets a new board or there's a reorganization, or on a smaller scale, when a team gets a new manager or a new customer sometimes, or even when something external changes like the economy or a government or there's new legislation. Sometimes it could be anything that kind of changes the status quo enough. Culture is just the way things are done around here, and the way things are done changes in a way that you find uncomfortable or unappealing. And so the likelihood of you finding yourself in this situation is probably higher than you think.
Yeah. Our outline for today is, number one, bide your time. Number two, get results. Number three, maintain your network. And number four, don't try to change a culture. So let's talk about bide your time. Don't make sudden changes, especially changes that can't be undone. This kind of situation, a takeover resulting, as they almost always do, in a change of culture, reminds us of the principles of being ready for a career change at all times, right? Having your sail set in case the wind blows, right? And you want to have your resume ready. You want to be open to opportunities, listen when recruiters contact you, and ideally making career moves when you want to, not when you have to.
Yeah, all the people that say, how do I not make it obvious that I'm job hunting? Well, the answer is always be job hunting, or at least always be open to opportunities, always be discussing them, always have your resume ready. And then, you know, it doesn't seem like you're doing something unusual because you're not. Mm-hmm. Right? And the rule around here is make job changes when you want to make job changes, not when you're forced to make them. Because the more control you have over the timing of a career change, the better it will go for you. If you have to make a change because you've been laid off, you have to find something within the time frame of the amount of money you have in your bank account. And that could be a month, it could be 6 months if you've been prudent, it could be 6 years if you've been really prudent, but you're being forced by the amount of money in your bank account. And so if it's a month, then you have to find something that you can get in a month. If you're controlling the timing, so if you've been laid off, but you have 6 months in the bank and you can say, okay, I can wait 3 months, then you're more likely to be able to choose the salary, choose the location, choose the specifics of the work, choose a role that's a good career move, choose a start date that works with your children's schooling, choose a start date that works with your bank account, you know, that is a... it's common in the UK to be paid monthly. And so you could leave a job and not be paid for 2 months because you've left at the end and their pay period is at the beginning of the month and then the other job is paid at the end of the month. And so you would go 2 months and that's difficult. All of those factors matter and you are so much more likely to get what you want when you're making the choice about when you're changing jobs, not when you're being forced to by an outside change. When, you know, if you feel forced to by the culture change at the company, then you're more likely to have to make choices that you don't want to make. There's such an increase in your ability to get what you want, to make choices that you feel are good for you and your family, or to get a job that meets all your requirements if you can wait 3 to 6 months rather than having to do it right now because I can't bear this situation.
Absolutely. And the changes that seem enormous at first often either seem to reduce in size over time. The whole situation that we're talking about, this negative culture change, reverts back to the status quo over mm-hmm. time. And that happens a lot. Things happen. They could be small things. They could be big things. But, you know, even things like new chairs and desks in an office change the feeling, make it feel weird for a few weeks. But then over the course of time, right, like you would think that something like new desks, new chairs would be immaterial and not important. But what is it? The Hawthorne mm-hmm. experiments, right, proved to us that it doesn't matter what the change is, change affects performance.
Yeah. The Hawthorne experiments are the ones from the 1930s where the productivity experiments, and they did a bunch of different things to see if they increased productivity or decreased productivity. And it didn't matter what they did, productivity increased. And basically they concluded that the fact that people were being watched, as it were, but people were taking an interest in the workers made them increase their productivity, not any of the other things. So just because something changes, that made the increase in productivity. So it doesn't matter what happens. Productivity is affected. So, and big cultural shifts take a long time. So it might feel like the company's been taken over and all of a sudden everything's changed and all of a sudden, you know, whatever, the culture is completely different. You've gone from some relaxed, laid back, everybody comes in when they feel like it, dresses how they feel like, to some corporate thing where everybody has to clock in and clock out atmosphere. That might not last because that kind of big cultural shift takes a long time. And as I was writing this, I was thinking about, actually, it feels like all of these equality shifts are happening really fast now. The difference in the equality laws seem to be changing really quickly. But then I thought about it, and I think that's not true. It's just because they're coming on the back of the laws and the shifts in attitude that we've had over, like, starting at the beginning of the 1900s. So they're not coming fast. It's taken 125 years to get to this point. And right. now we're just saying, oh, this group of people, oh, well, that makes sense because that's another group of people. And, you know, mm-hmm. this is the same as the group of people that we've already decided that, you know, makes no sense to discriminate between this group and that group. So why are we discriminating between this group and that group? So,
right.
Yeah, it's not that cultural shifts are happening more quickly. It's just that we're adding to the cultural shift that's already happened. So history tells us that we're much more likely to go back to the status quo if there is no impetus for that culture change to keep happening. If somebody is standing by the door telling you to clock in, clock out. And there's some kind of mechanism by which nobody's getting paid if they're not clocking in and clocking out, then that will stay. Mm-hmm. But if there's no consequence, the status quo will come back and everybody will start being more relaxed and it'll go away. More likely.
Yeah. And this is true even when your company is the small one, right? Being merged into a big one. Wendy, you have a story about this, right?
Yeah, so I worked for IBM. I was a contractor for IBM, and I worked in an IBM office, and my boss had taken me on and said, "You'll be bored." And I said, "No, I won't." And she said, "You'll be bored." And I said, "No, I won't." And she said, "Okay." And then after 2 weeks, I was like, "I'm bored now." And she said, "I knew you could do this job. Let go and help these people. They've just been taken over." It was like the week before. And it was in another office in the next town over. And there was no IBM people in this office block. And there was about 400 of them. And the rule was, if you were taken over by IBM, on the first day you were taken over by IBM, everything was IBM. It was every system, every three-letter acronym, everything you said, everything you did, everything. You were just IBM. And that was what was expected, except that there was no IBM people in this building. So there was nothing happening. There was nobody to kind of enforce it. There was nobody to say, "Oh, that's not the way we do things around here. That's not the IBM way." So they carried on doing what they were doing. And they negotiated a bunch of outs for themselves. In this office where I was, they had always had beer on Friday afternoons. And IBM was a no alcohol place, except that they had negotiated for the next 2 years, they were allowed beer on Friday afternoons, and they carried on doing it. So for them, even though the rule was, it was, you were blue on the day IBM took you over, they weren't. And so as strong as the IBM culture is, and as big as it was, and they were only 400 people, because they were in a little office all on their own, and because they were needed, that they had a certain piece of technology that IBM wanted, that so that gave them leverage when they were negotiating. Like, the culture didn't change. It did change gradually. I was there for about 4 years. It did gradually change over the 4 years I was there, as some IBM people came into the building and some of the people that were in that building were left and worked more on IBM sites. But it was a very gradual shift. It wasn't the day one shift that was predicted. So it doesn't happen the way that perhaps we think. And the status quo is so strong, so much stronger than probably IBM would have liked in that instance.
Yeah. And even if the initial cultural changes that you see are undesirable, I don't think you can know what all of them are going to be. I mean, you might get a new manager, and their first action might be to say, everybody has to work or has to be at work at 8:30 a.m. when your old manager was always relaxed about when you came into the office and you were happy about that, right? But you might find that this new manager is actually quite relaxed about working from home days or what time you leave. And they just happen to, you know, have what time you show up or have everybody there at the same time. That really is an important focal point for them. You know, just because they take one action doesn't mean that you can extrapolate that now that's how they're going to approach everything. And they may be really good at things that maybe your other manager wasn't, right? Maybe they're really good about you doing, you know, development stuff. Maybe they're good at learning and development as an ancillary kind of practice. Maybe they're really good at giving feedback or sharing, you know, developmental conversations, or something that's important to you. So you can't make a fast decision and then take actions that would be impossible to undo. That's really the crux of it.
Especially new managers.
Oh, yeah.
They often
they're finding come their in way.
And they're, I've got a thing that I need to take action to show that I'm taking action, to show that I'm here. And often they backtrack on that. The second edition of The Effective Manager is now available. Mark, Kate, and Sarah included the data they've gathered over the last 4 years to help you manage teams that are working remotely or in a hybrid environment, build trust, talk about performance, push work down, and ask for more, no matter where your teams are located. Order your copy today from the Managed Tools website. Our next point is get results. So don't let change get you sidetracked and put you off your primary goal, which is getting results. And there's two kind of good reasons for this, and they're almost equal. So we could put one first and one second, and we could put them the other way around, but we'll go this way around. First of all, the person with the best results has the most influence. And that's true of anything. So you've probably noticed that the people around you who get the best results are the people who are immune from the rules that apply to anybody else. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter whether it's expensive submission or what time they come to work or what they wear or whether they go to meetings or anything else, the rules don't apply to them in the way they apply to everybody else. And so if a culture has changed, if the way things are done has changed in a way that you would prefer it had not, and you would like it, those new rules not to apply to you, getting results is the way you make sure that you have the most influence on whether or not those rules apply to you. And sometimes you can't break them. Sometimes you can't get around them. But having poor results is a guarantee that those, whatever those new rules are, they will apply to you.
Yeah. And I think this point can't be overstated. If you get results, you're going to have more influence. And if you decide, if you make the decision, and we, you know, our last point was about cautioning you from making rash decisions or taking actions that you can't undo. But if you do decide that you're going to be vocal or you're going to say something, if you know, that's not what we're advising right here, but if you decide you're going to do that, you should know that if your results slide and then you're going to use your sliding results as collateral or as fodder for this, you should know that that's less effective than getting great results, even in spite of this change, because your voice, your message is going to land, is going to carry more weight because you have great results. So you should know that. And you should also know that this is our observation of organizational life. We're not recommending that if you get great results, you should then walk around like the rules don't apply to you.
No. Yes, that's
don't
true.
Be that person.
Yes. Yeah. And the other thing about getting results is the people that get results get promoted, and the people that get promoted have the influence over the culture and the way things are done.
Yeah. And the second point about getting results is if you do decide that you're going to leave, the better the results, the better the results are on your resume, right? The better you get results, the better you can have those results reflected on your resume. And when your results on your resume are good, the easier your job hunt is going to be. You know, the obvious benefit of the difference between being able to put a 20% increase versus a 10% increase on your resume, one is twice as impressive as the other. There's also a psychological benefit. Imagine having stuck out your position for 6 months after the transition, got that 20% increase, and going into interviews feeling like a rock star instead of going into interviews feeling like you were pushed out of a job by a bunch of people you didn't like. In which interview do you think you're likely to perform better?
It's so obvious, right?
It's so obvious, right?
And anytime that you have got results and you're going into interviews feeling like a rock star, that's the day you're going to perform the best. Any day you feel like a rock star, it doesn't matter what you're doing, you're going to perform better than a day that you feel pushed into something.
Mm-hmm. I also think, Wendy, it's a small thing, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think that sticking it out for 6 months, most industries are pretty small. Mm-hmm. And an acquisition or a merger or, you know, a change that is going to affect the culture to this scale is probably known in organizations that you could potentially be interviewing with. And so showing that you stuck it out for 6 months and you didn't just leave you know, they're going to have a rough idea of when that transition happened. And I think the more you can distance yourself from the actual time of the pivot point of the transaction or of whatever it is, I think the more it speaks to your ability to weather storms and your ability to deal with adversity. If you leave at the moment that change happens, you might potentially have to answer some questions about whether you, you know, are the type of person who sticks it out or deals with things. Yeah, or leaves, you know, when the going gets tough.
Yeah, we have a podcast called The Downturn Rite of Passage, which is just about that. It's about the what you learn from going through a tough time. It's about downturns in economies, but if you never go through the downturn, you never learn what you learn in a downturn, which is a whole bunch of stuff that helps you in the upturns too. And you're right. The other thing about timing is if you leave at the point at which everybody leaves, like just after the acquisition, the competition is higher. If you can stick it out for 3 months, competition goes back to normal for those jobs.
Yep, that's a great point. So our next point is maintain your network. Maintain both your internal and external networks. Your internal network helps you take the temperature of the company. It helps you know whether you're the only one who feels like this, if you're in the only department that is suffering or having to deal with this, whether the change is, you know, widespread throughout the entire organization, whether it's just pockets of the companies where this is happening, or maybe there's pockets of the companies where the company where different things are happening.
Where you might want to move to.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So whether, you know, this particular change is happening more quickly in certain areas than others, and, you know, it's more slowly in other areas. It also tells you where you might have allies and where you might have enemies, which is good to know if you're thinking about making a move.
Yes, exactly. And your internal network is not there for you to vent. It's not helpful for you or for anyone else for you to be letting off steam all over the place. And apart from anything, constantly complaining and never doing anything about the situation isn't actually helping you feel any better. Unless the person you're complaining to is helping you find a strategy to change things and then holding you to delivering on that strategy, then you're just making both of you miserable because you're just complaining about the same things over and over again and you're not solving them, and that's not helpful. And remember, there are no secrets. Even if you think that person that you're complaining to is your best friend and they're not telling anybody, somebody somewhere knows that you've been talking. Even I was on Slack with Elizabeth the other day and we were talking and then I hung up and I then talked to Katie, I think, and she said, "What were you talking to Elizabeth about?" And I said, "How do you know I was?" And she said, "I could see both of you were on Slack. Both of you had the headset on thing, so you must have been talking to each other. See, there are no secrets. Everybody knows that you were talking to each other." You know, and sometimes somebody will call me and then I won't answer and they'll call somebody else on the team and they won't answer and they'll assume that we were on the phone together. And usually they're right because I don't talk to anybody outside the company mostly.
Yeah.
So there are no secrets. And if you are venting, people know about it. And remember, those people that came in and changed the culture, if you're venting about it, they see that as a negative. They are judging you as being against them. And that's not a good thing for your career.
Exactly. It's myopic to think that you'll, or naive, I was probably a better word, to think that you will be able to vent and truly it goes nowhere and nothing ever comes of it. You should know that, yeah, I can't say it better than there are no secrets. So externally, you obviously want to maintain your network so that you can job hunt when the time comes. That doesn't mean, though, that you have to wait.
Yeah, even though we said you should wait 3 to 6 months, you don't actually have to wait the 3 month delay.
Yeah, yeah. We're always open, right? We're always open to opportunities. We're always listening. And if a great opportunity comes up while you're waiting to see how this change kind of, how the dust settles, you know, with this change, then you should absolutely interview for the job. and take the job if it's the one for you based on all the criteria that we have talked through. So if you do wait and decide to move on in 3 to 6 months, it's much easier for to be able to ask people to help you find a job if you've been keeping that network warm, if you've been helping them and reaching out with whatever was pressing at the time or what they needed help with or anything like that. If you've been maintaining that relationship rather than just being a LinkedIn connection or a contact on Facebook or things like that, if you've actually been partaking in those relationship building or relationship maintaining activities, then it's much easier to reach out and get help.
So our last point is, don't try to change a culture. But one person can't change a culture. We've already said culture is how things are done around here. And that means how everybody does things around here. It's not how one person does things around here. That's just how one person does things around here. Culture is how everybody does it. It's the totality, the combination, the average of how things are done. If you go into a store and there's one aisle where everything's, you know, perfectly stocked and all the cans are the right way around and the aisle's been swept, and but the rest of the store is a mess, then that the culture of that store is not that one aisle. That's one manager trying really hard. But he's not having an influence over the rest of the store. The culture of that store is, unfortunately, not his aisle. And either the rest of the store will overcome his efforts, or it'll be affected and eventually the whole store will be like that aisle. It depends which way it goes. But at that point, his aisle is not the culture of the store.
That's a great analogy. I'm sure a lot of people listening don't know that my first kind of foray into professional life and managing people was in retail. I worked for a large retailer, and we used to say all the time, when we reset seasonal aisles, like back to school, Halloween, Christmas, you know, those areas, we wanted those to look as good as possible because they're obviously a reflection of how detailed we are and all of that. But then after working there for a few years, what I determined was there were certain sets, it just wasn't going to look good. Like, for example, right? Halloween costumes, like especially Halloween costumes, kids' Halloween costumes, all of that. There's all these different pieces and parts, and the packaging is not industrial strength. You know, it's it falls apart pretty quickly. And so we did our best to make sure that those aisles looked really good. But we said, that's not going to be what, when people, you know, corporate comes and walks the store, or when guests come in and walk the store, that's not where we're going to make our imprint or make people see what we do as our store. It's going to be the rest of the store. Right. So we focused on making sure that everything else looked good, knowing that we're going to do our best with those aisles. But sometimes, right, it's the same thing. It's the opposite. It's the inverse, right? You've got to showcase your culture in not one aisle, but everywhere else.
Everywhere else. Yeah. How things are done around here is the majority, not that one aisle. Yeah. Not where the Halloween costumes are falling apart.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, and the masks and the...
I can just imagine.
It's a sensitive topic.
So if you think you're the one person who, you know, this cultural change has come and you're the one person who's going to be able to fight it back, you're like King Canute. Do you know who King Canute is?
No.
Okay, King Canute was an English king. I don't know. He's taught to English children anyway. He sat on the beach and he commanded the tide not to come in. And of course, the tide comes in. So he's a demonstration of the fruitlessness of things. So
I like it.
You are King Canute if you think that you can single-handedly change culture, unfortunately. Yep. And change from the bottom up is rarely successful. As much as we wish to say that one individual contributor can change a company, it is just not true unless you're the person that owns the company. And it's far better to spend your energy on results and relationships, because that is what gets you the power, in inverted commas. And the more power you have, the more you can change. The more relationship power and the more results power, the more expertise power you have, and even the more role power you have, the more you can change. A manager can change things for 8 people that he manages. A director can change the culture for the 50 people she manages. And an executive can change the culture for the 500 people that work for them. It's the results and the relationships that how you change things. And it's far better to put your energy into that than commanding the tide not to come in.
Yeah. I think that brings up a good point, which is depending on where you sit in the organization, right? You may have more influence over culture than others, and that's important. It's also important to know when that culture change is happening, which is the catalyst for us even recording this cast, is understanding if there's a big change in culture and it happens quickly, probably means it's coming from very, very high levels, mm-hmm. which is important to know if that's something that it's causing you to think, could I potentially be making a move because of this?
Any change is disturbing for most of us. If most of us humans react negatively to change initially and then come round to the positives in time. There's even a term called post-traumatic growth, which is defined as the positive psychological change experienced as a result of struggling with highly challenging, highly stressful life circumstances. In other words, if something truly dreadful happens to you, there is something that happens afterwards that is what makes people say, I wouldn't wish it on someone else, but I'm glad it happened to me because this happened afterwards. Our initial, even a few weeks afterwards, our initial reaction isn't a good indicator of whether this change is going to work for us in the long term. And so that's why we're saying bide your time, because probably in the first few weeks or even the first few months, you don't know how it's going to shake out. And if you get a great opportunity, jump on it. But like, we're not saying wait forever or wait and miss out on something else. We're just saying don't jump out of the frying pan and into the fire, as they say. We're not saying stay at a company where the culture definitely doesn't suit you or where you can see that, you know, this is the train has jumped tracks and it's heading in a direction that you don't want to go. But we're also saying don't make changes for the sake of emotional changes because, you know, it's just happened and you haven't let it shake out. Just take your time. And as they say to children now, make good decisions.
I think most people listening to this understand that the more information you have, the better informed your decisions can be. And sometimes that's time. That's how you get more data, more information is a little bit more time.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic.
Bye, everyone.